Well, hello there, Sanctuary Columbus Church, and welcome to the third week of our Psalms of Summer series. If you are joining us for the first time online today, we say thank you and welcome. We are so blessed to have you with us today. And if you've been joining us for the last few weeks, you know that this series has been one of returning to one of the most familiar parts of the Bible, the Book of Psalms. Now, these are poems, praises, and prayers that were written by various authors, nearly half of them by King David from the Old Testament, that capture some of the earliest reactions to the words and actions of God. These were written by people thousands of years ago who were nurturing a relationship with the same God that we love today. But one of the most beautiful things about the Psalms is that they quickly became 150 songs that the people of Israel sang over and over again. Whether it was in the temple for worship or rituals, during celebrations or during processionals up to the temple, or even in their homes during times of prayer. In fact, most scholars believe that the Psalms were actually written with the intent that they would be sung. And so this got me wondering, what is it that we know about songs that are meant to be sung? Well, one of the first things is that they're rarely meant to be sung just once, right? Most of the people who write songs write them imagining that they'll be sung over and over again. And so they write them so that they're easy to remember or so that they're paired with an event or an occasion that happens over and over again. And we can think of a few examples of this. There's the birthday song, which, depending on your cultural background, is the traditional version or the Stevie Wonder version. There are Christmas songs. For baseball lovers, there's Take Me Out to the Ball Game. And for celebrations that feature people of African descent, there's Lift Every Voice and Sing. These are all songs meant to be sung over and over again for certain events or occasions. And so that brings me to the second thing that we know about all songs that are meant to be sung, and that's that they tend to get stuck in our heads, right? I'm sure you can think of the last song that you caught yourself singing or humming while you were walking around the house by yourself. You didn't ask your brain to do that, did you? And you may have even asked your brain to stop, but it probably didn't, at least not for a while, or at least until another song got stuck in your head, because this is what songs are made for. They're made to be repeated to the point where they get stuck. So as we lean into our devotional for today, we begin with a simple question that also serves as the title for this message. What song is stuck in your head? What song is stuck in your head? Now, those of you who know me know that I serve as a therapist here in the city of Columbus. And if you think about it, much of the work that I end up doing with my clients involves me asking this question throughout the course of a therapeutic relationship. What song is stuck in your head? See, one of several lenses that I wear as I look at my clients every week is a lens called the cognitive behavioral lens. And basically, that lens or way of looking at my clients says that there are messages that are sent by the world around us. And they're sent to us every day by the people who take care of us from a young age or by the people with whom we share long-term or emotionally intense relationships, by our school environment, by the media we consume. And without even thinking about it, we take these messages and we internalize them and turn them into statements or core beliefs about ourselves and the way that the world relates with us. So in a way, these core beliefs become the songs that we sing to ourselves and about ourselves. And those songs turn into automatic thoughts that we think without thinking about it. And those thoughts turn into the feelings that we feel without thinking about it. And those feelings impact the things that we do without us thinking about it. And so the range of things that my clients do that tend to bring them into my office can range from crying or worrying far more often than they would like, to lashing out in anger at people far more often than they'd like and for reasons that they can't quite understand. And so when I sit down with a client and I'm looking at them through this cognitive behavioral lens, I'm essentially inviting them into a process where we discover what songs they've been singing about themselves and to themselves. The song that's been impacting their thoughts, feelings, behavior, and relationships. Now, here's the thing. Most of these songs that we sing to ourselves, these core beliefs that are ingrained so deeply within us, most of them are helpful and healthy. But then there are some of these songs that have lyrics that are just a hair off from the truth. And it's those lyrics that these precious souls that I'm partnering with in these therapeutic relationships end up discovering with me that they didn't even know were there. So when I read Psalm 8, I imagine that somewhere along this psalmist's journey of reacting to the words and the actions of God, God asked them, what song is stuck in your head? What song have you been singing about yourself and to yourself all this time? What is it that you've been singing to yourself that's been silently influencing the ways that you think, feel, behave, and relate with the world? Now, before sitting down to write Psalm 8, I can imagine that the song the psalmist had been singing about themselves didn't sound too different than the song that many of us sing about ourselves today. The psalmist was living in the ancient Near Eastern culture, right? A culture that constantly sent them the message that they were only alive in order to appease and entertain the gods. And if they wanted worth beyond that, they needed to be proximate to other people with wealth, power, or association with the royal bloodline. And if we're honest, the times really haven't changed that much. Still today, so many of us live with this impulse to measure our worth against whether we're employed, with whom we're employed, how successful we are at work, or to whom we're connected. So before getting Psalm 8 stuck in our heads, we tend to find ourselves singing the song of the world, a song that says, I am loved, but only if I'm productive or proximate to power. And still, the world kept throwing the psalmist message after message about the scope of their power or their impact on the world around them. And so we discovered a second message that they only had influence on the power with on the people with less power than them, or over this little plot of land that they were given to farm. And so a similar song lyric still echoes in the back of our minds today. That I have power, but only over what other people give me. And day after day, the world tells us that we only have power over the jobs that we work, the children that we nurture, or within the privileges that society gives us based on our race or our class or our culture. And because that list is so short, some of us find ourselves clinging to those few realms of power for dear life, willing to sacrifice our health and sometimes even our character just to hold on to them. But here and now, thousands of years after Psalm 8 was sung for the first time, after listening over and over again to the song being sung by people who loved and were loved by the same God that we love today, we sing a new song. We sing a song to ourselves that says the God who created the universe loved us enough to create each and every one of us in their image. That regardless of how productive we are or how proximate we are to power, we are endowed with qualities about us that make us worthy of glory and honor, period, without question. We proudly sing to ourselves that the God who governs the positions of the moon and the stars trusted us with bearing their image and tending to each of the four relationships they set in place in the Garden of Eden. Our relationship with God, our relationship with each other, our relationship with our internal world, and the relationship we share with non-human creation. This is the new song that God invites us to sing to ourselves through Psalm 8, to replace the song of the world, the song that we're invited to sing to ourselves and about ourselves every single day in order to drown out the messages of the world. I am loved, you are loved, regardless of our productivity or our proximity to power. I have power. You have power to nurture all the relationships that God set in place. What a beautiful song this is. May it get stuck in our heads and become the soundtrack of every relationship and interaction we share with others. May we sing it to ourselves in the mirror. May we sing it to each other, even when we're in conflict or in disagreement. May we compose it into the background music of our children's schools, of our workplaces, and of our interactions with the community. This new song about our worth and our influence on the world. Will you pray with me? Lord, you are so generous that you would lavish your love upon us from the very beginning, in the form of creating us in your image and of trusting us to co-govern creation with you, Lord. How majestic is your name indeed, God, that you would show your love in such a way. So Lord, I call out, Lord, I speak the truth right now about the way that the world tries to contradict that true story about your relationship with us. It tries to send us different messages about what we're worth and what influence that we have on creation. And so, Lord, I pray that you would help us to push back against that narrative. Will you help us to sing this new and true song about what we are worth and what we can do in partnership with you, Lord? Help us to deeply know the truth. And we ask all of these things in your son's precious name. Amen. God bless you.